Thank you very much. I'd also like to give a very big thank you to everybody at Perimeter for making my visit so far extremely pleasant, and I'm sure I'll enjoy the rest of my time here. So the subject of my talk today is 5D n equals 1 field theories, which have a non-trivial UV fixed point. And this talk will be based primarily on these two papers, two recent papers. The first being with Yichul Kim, Kamran Bafa, my advisor, Gabby Zafrir, and the second being with Sheldon Katz, also Yichul Kim, and again, Kamran Bafa. And in particular, one important feature of these 5D theories that we'll be exploring and that I'll be discussing is the structure of the Coulomb phases of these theories. So 5D field theories with n equals 1 supersymmetry are rather interesting in their own right, but in my opinion, this subject and this project should be seen as part of a larger effort to classify SCFTs in D greater, I should have put an equal sign there, D greater than or equal to 4 dimensions, using SUSY and some insights from string theory, in particular, the relationship between these theories and geometric singularities in string theory. And so a major inspiration for this project, in fact, was the success of efforts to classify 6D SCFTs, both 2,0 and 1,0. It was shown by Witten in 95 and subsequently studied in many papers that 6D 2,0 SCFTs were in one-to-one correspondence with 8D singularities. And about 20 years later, work was done by these authors in a series of papers showing that 6D 1,0 SCFTs could be classified in terms of seven brains, non-perturbative seven brains in F theory, wrapping collapsing cycles of collapsing configurations of P1s in the F theory base. And in both of these projects, both of these classification efforts, the insights from string theory and geometry were very, very crucial for understanding the UV completions of these theories because they're rather mysterious and have properties that are difficult to access through conventional Lagrangian formulations. And in view of these successes, one might naturally think that 5D is a good next step to attempt, keeping in mind that many, and possibly all 5D theories, are related to these 6D theories via some kind of Kaluza-Klein compactification, possibly with some extra features like an outer automorphism twist. So before I launch into details, I'd like to give a bit of history and status of the 5D problem. A systematic investigation of 5D n equals 1 theories was initiated from 1996, between 1996 and 1998, a series of papers by the following authors. And these papers used, in total, they used the interplay of geometric engineering and string theory, brain constructions in type 2A and type 2B, and constraints from supersymmetry in 5 dimensions to identify theories with non-trivial UV fixed points. And this is interesting because 5D theories are, they're non-renormalizable, so they're believed to flow to trivial theories in the IR, but nonetheless, a lot of them actually do have very interesting non-trivial fixed points in the UV. So out of this, there are two important points I'd like to make. There were two partial classifications of 5D theories. The first was a geometric classification of rank 1 theories. And by the way, throughout this talk, I'll be using a notion of rank. What I mean by rank is when there is some gauge theory description available for the theory, the rank then co this notion of rank coincides with the rank of the gauge group. But it also extends to cases where there is no conventional Lagrangian formulation and it should just be understood as roughly the dimension of the Coulomb branch, so the number of Coulomb branch parameters you have. So there was a geometric classification of rank 1 theories, and these were argued to be in one-to-one correspondence with Calabi-Yau threefolds, which are whose singularities are characterized by contracting Delpezzo surfaces, DPN. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with DPNs, I'll say more precisely what they are later on in the talk. And a second classification was proposed, which was more or less purely field theoretic in nature. And the result of that classification was a number of bounds on the matter hypermultiplet representations R. and topological data like classical Chern-Simons number or discrete Z2 theta angle for a simple gauge algebra G. Now, both of these seem to be incomplete, and this was, I think, realized by some authors, some people working on this problem at the time, and it became clearer as time went on. The geometric classification is incomplete for very obvious reasons, namely, classification for theories of arbitrary rank hadn't been pursued, so it only had been done for rank one theories, not extended to higher rank. And more importantly, the gauge theory classification is also incomplete because there are several known, I should even say families, so not even individual cases, but families of counterexamples that can be engineered in string theory by some kind of stringy, either string compactification or a brain construction, which produce field theories whose field theory descriptions exceed the bounds that were imposed in the gauge theory classification. And here I've put IMS in parentheses to refer to the initials of the last names of the authors who carried out this classification, namely Intrilegator, Morrison, and Seiberg. And in particular, some of the counterexamples include quiver gauge theories, which are supposed to be ruled out from possible 5D gauge theories completely, as well as many examples of 5D theories that it just exceed, have numbers of matter multiplets that exceed the bounds that were placed by IMS. So how do we explain this? There's a simple explanation, and that explanation is that the criteria for the existence of a non-trivial 5D fixed point imposed by Intrilegator, Morrison, and Seiberg, I'll just say IMS from here on out, these constraints were too restrictive. So they turned out to be sufficient but not necessary to identify a 5D N equals 1 SCFT. And what I'll show later is that it's possible to relax these criteria to a set of necessary, gently relax them, by the way. Obviously, if you relax them too much, then you can get a very massive overcounting of theories. But what I'll show is that it's possible to gently relax these to a set of necessary criteria, which aren't perhaps not sufficient. And moreover, hopefully, I'll convince you that the only surefire way to identify theories with a non-trivial UV fixed point is to study their UV completions in string theory using geometry or using brains. So, given the fact that this classification is incomplete, what approach should one take? On the one hand, the gauge theory approach is tractable, but it misses some important information, some input from non-perturbative physics. And on the other hand, geometric classification is actually rather difficult to carry out. And so, what I hope to convince you of actually is that despite apparent difficulties and obstructions with doing a geometric classification, it actually has a hope of being a viable solution to this problem. And moreover, it solves both of these. So it solves the issue of gauge theory classification, and it also captures non-Lagrangian theories as well. So the plan for my talk is as follows. There's roughly two parts. The first part is just a review of the gauge theory aspect, and then the second part of the talk will focus on geometry and future prospects for carrying out this classification in arbitrary rank. Are there any questions before I jump into details? Okay. So, very fast reminder of some of the salient features of 5D N equals 1 supersymmetry. And by N equals 1, I mean 8 supercharges. The superconformal algebra has a bosonic subalgebra, SO4, comma 1, times SU2R. In the massless fields, I don't really care about the fermions in this discussion, so I'll just talk about the bosons. And in particular, the focus will be on the vector multiplet. So there's a vector multiplet with a gauge connection and a scalar field, a real scalar, phi, and there's a hypermultiplet. And locally, the moduli space of vacua consists of two branches, the Higgs branch and the Coulomb branch. And the focus of this talk will be on the Coulomb branch, which is parametrized by the VEVs of the vector multiplet scalars phi. So at a generic point, a generic value of phi inside of the Coulomb branch, phi takes values in the Cartan subalgebra. It breaks the gauge group to the stabilizer, which is just the maximal torus, U1 to the R, where I'm using R to refer to the rank of the gauge group here. And consequently, one can conclude from this that the Coulomb branch is a subset of the dual fundamental vial chamber, if you mod out by the residual vial gauge symmetry. The SUSY protected data of these theories on the Coulomb branch consists of massive BPS states, which can include both electric particles as well as gauge instantons and magnetic monopole strings. And these are the central charges. Here, these M sub F are just a collection of mass parameters. And this M sub zero is equal to the 1 over G, G squared, where G is the classical gauge coupling. So an important thing to realize here is that there are gauge instantons, and this will become a recurring, you'll see this issue pop up again and again throughout the talk, which are charged under the following U1 current. And these can also carry gauge charges. So when we talk about the BPS data, the Coulomb branch, and theories which are either allowed or disallowed by studying properties of this BPS spectrum, the gauge instantons actually play a very important role. And this is essentially what's missed by the field theoretic classification.
So you say a subset because there's a superpotential?
Sorry?
Is there a superpotential on the Coulomb branch?
There's the, the theory is characterized by a one loop effective potential, but the reason I say that it's a subset is because there are constraints coming from non-perturbative physics which restrict you to a smaller region than the fundamental vial chamber. You were asking about why I say it's a subset and not like the full. Yeah. So it really has to do with non-perturbative physics. In other words, the states which have instanton charge. Sorry?
There's some effective potential on Coulomb branch as well.
No, everything is characterized by this potential here. So there's some low energy effective field theory, Lagrangian, in the cases when there is a gauge theory description. But everything, all the couplings and everything else are controlled by this object, which is the prepotential.
But does it lift some of the directions of the Coulomb branch?
You're asking, does the prepotential lift some of the directions? The gauge instantons will.
But not this potential?
No, it doesn't. No, the thing that determines, if you forget about the gauge instantons or theories with non-zero instanton charge, then the thing that determines the structure of the Coulomb branch is basically the central charges of the BPS particles, and you have to ask that they be positive. And so forgetting about those, and then it lands you exactly on the dual fundamental vial chamber. So it's generically that, but then once you consider these instanton particles, it restricts it to a subset. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So subset, but not of lower dimension?
No, not of lower dimension.
So it's not really lifting directions, it's introducing new walls.
I'll come to that in more detail. Generically, it's introducing new walls, but there are some special cases where it actually does collapse to a lower dimension. But those are kind of special cases, which I'll hopefully say more about later. So the constraints of SUSY imply that the low energy effective field theory is characterized by prepotential, which is cubic, and the scalars, the BEVs of the scalars. It's one loop exact. And so these terms here are classical terms. And then the corrections, which are generated at one loop, you can see they split up into two pieces. One piece consists of a sum over roots inside of the adjoint representation. And then the rest is a sum over weights. And an important feature here that I like to point out is that they contribute with opposite sign. So I'll come back to this point later on. So how do we extract data from F to learn information about the low energy effective theory? Well, since it's cubic and phi, you can extract data by computing three derivatives. First derivative of F will give you the monopole string tension right here. And I use this D to just denote like the what people sometimes call a dual coordinate. There's also the effective gauge coupling, which is a second derivative. And finally, you can extract Chern-Simons coupling by taking third derivative. So this is some of the terms that appear in the effective action, and you can see that the second and third derivatives appear explicitly inside of the expression for the Lagrangian. Now I'd like to talk about the phase structure on the Coulomb branch. For generic phi in the Coulomb branch, the BPS spectrum is generally massive, but states can become massless or tensionless for very special values. And if you recall to the form of the central charges, these E sub E, these are linear in the phi. And so what this means is that when one of these expressions for mass vanishes, it defines a hyperplane, or what I'll call a wall inside of the Coulomb branch, where some massless states appear. So in general, you can have massless hypermultiplet states appearing on these walls, which are on the interior of the Coulomb branch. And on the boundaries of the Coulomb branch, there are monopole strings which become massless. Now, I call these walls because they denote sharp phase transitions, which are characterized by singular behavior. And one way to detect this behavior is to observe that the Chern-Simons couplings jump discontinuously when you pass from one chamber to the other. And the fact that there is some discontinuity in the structure of the Coulomb branch is evident from the expression for the prepotential, if you simply pay attention to the fact that there are absolute values which can change sign. And finally, I should note that the conformal fixed point is when 1 over g squared goes to 0, and this is located at the origin of the Coulomb branch. So schematically, the sort of picture you should keep in mind is essentially a cone, or a fan, maybe I should say, consisting of several cones. And these cones are joined together at various hyperplanes, or walls. And these walls are what define the interior singular phase transitions, and the boundaries are these extremal boundaries of the cone. So the criteria for existence of a theory with a non-trivial UV fixed point that Introligator, Morrison, and Seiberg first used to identify the classification of gauge theories is the following. They demanded that the effective coupling, the gauge coupling, be positive on the entirety of the Coulomb branch. So their assumption, by the way, is that the Coulomb branch is the entire fundamental Weyl chamber, or dual Weyl chamber. I'll be sloppy about the distinction between the two. And equivalently, what this means, in view of the fact that the gauge coupling is expressed as the second derivative of F, this could be interpreted as the condition that F is convex on the entirety of the Coulomb branch, which, again, I stress, is assumed to be the entire fundamental Weyl chamber. Now, if you recall the expression for F, I mentioned that the sign would be very important for understanding the structure of the Coulomb branch. And because there's a minus sign here, what this implies is that extra matter contributions make the prepotential more convex, less convex. So as you add more, it becomes less and less convex. And if you add too much, then it ceases to be convex. And so essentially what this means is that one can place a bound on the types and the numbers of different matter representations that appear. And in practice, this becomes a bound on the multiplicities of a given representation and also on the type. Because one can assign roughly a notion of a size to given representations. I can give more details about this later, but I'll just be schematic about it right now. The upshot of these constraints is that one gets a list of permissible simple gauge algebra, numbers of matter representations, and available topological data K, which correspond to theories that have non-trivial fixed points. So for example, some of the bounds that they derived by using these constraints are the following for pure SUN with Chern-Simons level K. And here's another example for SUN with antisymmetric matter and some number of fundamental flavors. Another thing, by the way, that they ruled out was the existence of quiver gauge theories. So as I stated earlier, there is some disagreement between this classification and known stringy constructions. And two examples, and this is one which I'll talk about in more detail in another one or two slides. So an interesting example is quiver gauge theories. And the one that I'll talk about specifically is SU2 times SU2 with a bifundamental matter hypermultiplet. And there's also many brain systems that were found more recently, which construct theories that exceed the IMS bounds. For example, SU3 with 10 fundamental flavors. So the source of this discrepancy is the assumption that the Coulomb branch is actually the entirety of the fundamental vial chamber. This turns out to be too restrictive. And a resolution to this discrepancy is relaxing this notion and allowing the Coulomb branch to be a proper subset as opposed to the full thing. And the motivation for doing this is that the EFT can become unphysical for some regions of the fundamental vial chamber, depending on the type of theory. And these extra restrictions, as we'll see in more detail, come from non-perturbative states, non-perturbative physics. And the reason that additional restrictions are difficult to see from the perturbative description is because, by definition, the perturbative description is not sensitive to these non-perturbative states, and so it's impossible to calculate their BPS masses, and thus just having the perturbative description of the prepotential, one doesn't have enough information to actually see how they restrict one to subsets of the fundamental vial chamber. So here's a particularly striking example, SU2 plus SU2 with one bifundamental matter hypermultiplet. There's a non-perturbative construction for this theory using a geometric singularity or equivalently a PQ5 brain web in type 2B. These two notions are dual to one another. So when it's convenient, I'll actually interchange between the two descriptions. So if one calculates the fundamental vial chamber, it looks like this quadrant of the plane. And just for simplicity, let's restrict our attention to one of the two chambers. So it consists of two chambers, and I'll just talk about this one. So this is represented by the shaded region. I apologize if it's difficult to see, but this is supposed to be like a pink or light red. Well, this is the chamber that I'm looking at. And the IMS criteria would have excluded this theory from their classification because the effective gauge coupling develops a zero eigenvalue. So it ceases to be positive definite as a matrix, roughly along this blue line right here. So they would have said this theory is disallowed. However, even before tau ij degenerates, if you have some data about the non-perturbative states, you find that one encounters a massless instanton, and the mass vanishes along this red line. So this is when 2 phi 2 minus phi 1 goes to 0. And here I've reproduced the PQ5 brain web diagram, which could also be interpreted as this captures some features of the geometric singularity, which I'll talk about a couple slides from now. But essentially, there's a state associated with the length of this line right here appearing in the diagram. And as we go to this region in the Coulomb branch, one sees that this length actually goes to 0, and you have a massless state appearing. So what we can conclude from this example is that the Coulomb branch for this theory is actually a subset of the full vial chamber, fundamental vial chamber, and it should be understood as the subset that's bounded by this black line right here, at least for this chamber of this phase of the Coulomb branch, and in this blue line. So we actually have to, this red line. So this is the phase of the Coulomb branch that's actually physical, and we have to exclude this region.
Can I go through that red line and enter a different chamber?
For this, no.
No?
No. The reason why is because actually, as you see, I've written here, I've used a dual coordinate to denote what becomes massless here.
Yes.
And so actually what happens is that a monofold string becomes massless
okay.
on that region. So it's not just a
it's not just an instanton.
Yeah, it's not just an instanton. It's also
true?
No, it's not always true.
So in some cases you can continue into a different chamber.
Yeah, that's right. Was there another question? Sorry?
So what is the reason? So is there So you gave, so the string becomes tensionless, right, on the red line. So why is that as an obstruction to move into the adjacent region?
Oh, I understand your question. The reason why it's an obstruction, I think the best answer I can give without thinking a bit more carefully, is that if there's simply a particle that becomes massless, it's possible to, maybe the best way to understand it is in terms of geometry, or even actually looking at the perturbative description for F. You'll notice that F is, it has a bunch of contributions which have absolute values. And it just means that you change the sign that you pick when you go to the other side. But this is this, these absolute values are for the masses of different states, not monopole strings. So in some sense, it's an obstruction because normally with just a state and not an entire monopole string collapsing, it's possible to go through this singular phase transition and then pass to another description of the theory where you have a different mass for a given state. If a monopole string vanishes, then
I mean, naively, you know, what could happen is like this symmetric transitions, right? So something. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not a specialist in this. It's been a very long time when I was looking at this. But usually, there is probably some other branch that will come out, right?
That's the case. Certainly, that's the case for.
You know, there is a Higgs branch that is sticking out of that point on the Coulomb branch or something like that.
You certainly
are familiar with this 5D.
It's possible to meet. That's true. You can meet. So you can go to roots of the Higgs branch and go to some mixed Coulomb-Higgs branch when you look at these regions.
There's a potential that string, if the field theory breaks down.
The field theory breaks down. That's.
You can just integrate in a new particle a little bit.
I can imagine the situation which a string becomes tensionless. But just disappeared. I mean, becomes fluffier and fluffier.
It decouples from the.
In the Higgs space, I go out to the Higgs space, the tension of this vortex strain goes away, but there is just no vortex strain on the other side.
So I think that. I believe that situation, I agree, in that situation, one can. It sounds like you're, if please correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you're saying you can Higgs the theory, and that's certainly true, but passing beyond this wall. In the Coulomb branch, there isn't another direction or another part of the another phase of the Coulomb branch to pass through. So the only thing to do from there is really to Higgs. But
is there somehow a natural metric on the Coulomb branch, and that's really becomes a boundary in the case of this monopole string becomes tensionless?
Tau ij should be the metric on the Coulomb branch,
but
sometimes
different from this.
Yeah. So it's
not far away.
Sorry.
You're not saying it's far away.
No, I'm not saying it's far away. No. It is a bit different, and I have to confess I still have some, there's still some puzzles for me about understanding the relationship between the two.
Yeah.
So you can demand that tau ij is positive, but that's...
strange way I can go, something that's finite distance away on a modular space.
Doesn't the same thing happen on the more conventional boundary?
What do you mean?
So like, if you go back...
You're asking if the metric degenerates on the
The black boundary.
Yeah, the metric doesn't degenerate there.
Doesn't mean you have a tension.
No, the strings remain tensionful in those regions. It's just some BPS state becomes massless.
Okay, can you go to that picture?
Yeah, certainly. This picture?
I'm not talking about the dashed line. I'm talking about the solid.
Oh no, that's the same thing. It's the same sort of situation.
Unique to this particular thing?
It's not unique, no, not at all. It's the same, this is a generic behavior in any 5D Coulomb branch. You'll find that when you go to the extremal boundaries, you have some monopole string which becomes tensionless and the effective field description breaks down entirely. Yeah. It's not exactly like going to the conformal point, but it does share some features with the conformal point. The conformal point is characterized by all of the particles and the strings becoming tensionless roughly at the same rate. Here, there's not quite the same behavior, but there is a breakdown of the theory at that region.
Collapsed BPS.
Yeah, that's right.
So, just to clarify, if I look at a simple example, like pure situation-based theory, that if the Coulomb branch is a real line, right?
Yeah.
And it stops at the point, would you call that point analogous to this, or
the point? Do you mean the origin of the of the half line?
Yes.
That would be like the conformal fixed point. So it's not analogous because I would say that everything. If I had to make an analogy with this, I would say that line corresponds to the origin. So you could see it as a specialization of this, if you like. For pure SC2 theory, it's also possible to introduce mass parameters, and then the phase structure becomes richer. So then there's actually a distinction between going to that point and going to a wall inside of the theory. Does that answer your question? So in any case, it's possible to account for additional gauge theories by relaxing these constraints. And so what we did was we introduced a slightly different set of constraints. And I would say the most important thing is of the more important of the two is that one should demand that all the BPS states, including monopole strings, have positive tension at some generic point inside of the Coulomb branch. And then again, that tau ij should be positive or definite on the interior. So the benefit of this, and the reason why it actually gets you a lot but doesn't quite get you everything, is relates to the question that you had, actually. In many cases, the tensions of the monopole strings go like the product of two different BPS BPS masses. And a large number of those cases include one of the factors in this product being the mass of an instanton, a gauge instanton. So the example that we just looked at, this is the expression for the tension of the monopole string, and you can see 2 phi 2 minus phi 1, which was the mass of the non-perturbative particle that actually appears in that expression. So if you demand that these things are positive, in many cases, it actually renders the non-perturbative corrections that you're looking for. But it doesn't quite get you everything. So the result of this classification, as expected, we were able to recover all of the theories classified by Introligator, Morrison, and Tyberg. And in addition, we captured all known stringy examples, which are beyond the IMS bounds. I should stress that in this classification effort, we didn't look at quiver gauge theories. We only looked at examples of theories with simple gauge group. And one can roughly divide this classification into two types of theories fitting into two families, really. There's standard theories, which have classical gauge algebra and follow some, where the bounds follow some predictable patterns for arbitrary rank. And there's also a collection of exotic theories, which only extend up to rank 8 at maximum, and they require a case-by-case analysis. So an example of this would be pure SUN with Chern times level K, and the absolute value of K has to be bounded by n squared over n minus 2. And an interesting feature of this, I should point out also, is that when you go to, for all of these, when you go to very high rank, the bounds actually appear to asymptote back to the Introligator, Morrison, Tyberg bounds. So you can see that right here. For very large n, you get something that's approximately n, as n goes to infinity.
So you have grain constructions for this?
For all of these theories? No, not for all of them, but we have brain constructions for some of them.
Which usually does it involve 5 brain?
Yeah, one way to look at it is, I'm going to talk about that in the second part of the talk. So very briefly, here's a list, an example. These are SU3 theories, pure SU3 with Chern times level K, and this is an example of some of the bounds that we found. And we bounded these theories by classifying all the way up to some notion of an extremal or apparent theory, which is really a 5D KK gauge theory, which has a 6D UV fixed point and descends to a 5D theory or 5D fixed point when you integrate out some matter. So this is good. This is a progress in some sense because it rectifies this, it reconciles these gauge theory classifications with stringy constructions. Yeah.
When all the question marks in that table, does that mean you have no brain construction?
There was no prior construction at the time of classification.
But
no brain construction.
So you have a brain construction of those theories or not? Just they fall in your classification? The question marks.
Yeah, the question marks, we have a geometric construction. And yes, each of these geometric constructions has some kind of brain construction associated to it. But it was found after doing this gauge theory classification. So it's a bit early to declare victory because we really need detailed information about the non-perturbative spectrum to actually tell whether or not the theory admits a 5D fixed point. And so a nice example, as a general comment, So I've already mentioned the point about instantons, I think, several times. There's also the possibility of non-Lagrangian theories, which have no description as a gauge theory. And just as a general comment, the gauge theory description is actually very limited when you study the structure of the Coulomb branch. For example, if you use the full stringy or geometric construction of this SU2 plus SU2 theory, you can represent the Coulomb branch as by this graph, which tells you it encodes data about the instanton structure of the different phases. So each of these numbers represents a different phase. And the edges between the different numbers are walls separating the two. And the gauge theory phases that the phases of this full Coulomb branch, which apply to this gauge theory description, for which the gauge theory description is appropriate, are only 4 and 5. So there's actually a lot more data you can learn about the theory from geometry, which is invisible just by studying the gauge theory data on its own. So next step in the way to really turn this into a classification program, which is more precise, is to focus on stringy constructions, which exhibit the full BPS spectrum. So that's the first part of my talk. Are there any questions before I move on to discussing geometry?
Just have a silly question. So when you say non-gauge theory, that's in reference to UV.
Sorry, I don't understand.
I saw that you know the effective, action, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you're saying that that's not necessarily applicable as low energy effective actions, the three potentials that you wrote. So for some, when you say non-gauge theory,
yeah, there are theories
that those you cannot write down the prepotential.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, not a prepotential, an effective Lagrangian. You can still write.
The effective, that's what I mean. Sorry.
The potential gives you an effective Lagrangian, right?
Right. That's what I'm confused. So you know, I thought once you say low energy, I might be saying very stupid things because pretty much my knowledge ends up at n=2 in Fortiman. But there, what's happening, even though in the UV, you might have some very weird, exotic, you know, non-Lagrangian series, once you discuss low-energy effective action, you can always write down the prepotential, right? So as far as low-energy effective action concerned, they're all Lagrangian, right? So the Coulomb branch is whatever you want to arrange. So is the five-dimensional series in the classification when you are saying non-gauge theory something? So what do you mean? Does it mean that you don't even have a prepotential description?
Well, first point is that there is a prepotential description for everything. But
okay, so
yeah. So that's always there. The low-energy effective description, I think, is as a
is
coming.
It's just a prepotential.
Yeah, it's a prepotential. Yeah, yeah.
It's just in the UV, once I try to lift it up, sometimes I might not be able to write it down as a weakly coupled gauge theory.
That's correct. There's an example, I think, that illustrates this nicely. So I mentioned the rank 1 theories were in 1-1 correspondence with Del Pezzo surfaces.
Yeah, sure. So the same happens in some four-dimensional edge supercharges examples.
In particular, there's one Del Pezzo surface. So this P, this label on the Del Pezzo surface, is roughly P minus 1 tells you the number of fundamental flavors that are involved.
Okay.
So P can be 0, and you would have heuristically something that looks like negative
so
number.
So more crazy than that.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So the stringy constructions, there's two ways to think about this, and I'll really be focusing on M theory compactified on a local threefold. But this picture is dual to type 2B with 5 brain webs, where this depiction of the web occupies an R2, or sits inside of an R2 factor inside of the space-time. And as far as discussing the geometry and having some intuition, this picture is actually, I think, rather intuitive. So oftentimes I'll use this picture to try and illustrate some features of the geometry. And as we'll see, these compact faces correspond to 4 cycles inside of the threefold. So complex 4 cycles. Complex 2 cycles. They're 4 real dimensional. The threefold is a complex threefold, so it's 6 dimensional. And these curves correspond to complex curves or 2 cycles, real 2 cycles inside of the threefold. So just a bit of a review about the geometric engineering picture using M theory. It's possible to engineer these theories by compactifying M theory on a singular threefold, a local threefold. And in order to understand the BPS spectrum in this picture, we'll consider M theory on a smooth threefold Y, which degenerates to a singularity X. And the singularity X is characterized by, what I should say is that the BPS spectrum has the following geometric correspondence. So if you study particles, they correspond to M2 brains wrapping holomorphic two cycles. And if you study monopole strings, they correspond to M5 brains wrapping holomorphic four cycles. So the volumes of these cycles control the masses and tensions of these BPS particles. And when these cycles shrink, these masses and tensions go to zero. And so the singularity X is characterized by the vanishing of the volumes of all these cycles simultaneously. Now, it's possible to compute the BPS data in terms of various triple intersection numbers. So if I give a basis of 1 comma 1 forms, which are dual to four cycles in my smooth threefold Y, then I can expand an arbitrary Kähler form in terms of this basis. And we'll see that this object, which is called the Kähler cone, for this particular resolution of X, corresponds to the set of all possible Kähler forms, which can be used to measure positive volume cycles inside of the Clavijau. So it's given this description of the Kähler cone, and I'll explain what the significance of it, what its significance is in a few moments. Given this description, it's actually very convenient to work with tools of algebraic geometry, where the volumes of these classes corresponding to various divisors can be computed in terms of this intersection product. So the intersection product is really, you can think of it as a proxy for computing these integrals and calculating volumes in this fashion. But I'll use the dot in lieu of actually introducing this integral sign. So all the effective field theory data can be expressed in terms of these triple intersection numbers. Two divisors intersecting, so the divisors again correspond to four cycles inside of the threefold. If I intersect two of them, generically they intersect inside of a curve. And if I have three of them intersecting generically, you get a point or some number of points. And so these triple intersections roughly encode the number of points with multiplicity. And in particular, the prepotential can be computed as the volume of the threefold. And it can be expanded in the basis of triple intersections like this. And these DIJK triple intersection numbers correspond to the Chern-Simons couple, right? If I take three derivatives of this expression with respect to phi, then I'll get precisely this on the nose. So it has the same structure that you've seen already in the gauge theory description. As I mentioned before, it's more intuitive to work with a five-brain diagram. So again, you can think of these faces as different compact cycles, and the curves are four cycles, and the curves are different compact two cycles. Now, just a word about the Kähler cone phase structure. It mirrors the phase structure of the Coulomb branch entirely. So if you have a smooth threefold Y, again, the conformal limit is the singular limit where all the different cycles vanish. And it's possible to have several topologically distinct Y which map to the same singularity. And these sort of form an equivalence class where if you have two examples, y and y prime, which map to the same singularity, then they're related under this equivalence. And in fact, they're related up to what are called flop transitions. So a flop transition really describes a deformation where the volume of some two cycle, some curve, for instance, this one which is highlighted in red, goes to zero and formally becomes negative when you pass this region inside of the Kähler moduli space. And so because that description is pathological, since you have a negative, seem to have something that has negative volume, it's an invitation to trade your description of the geometry in terms of y for another one, which is y prime, for which the volume is actually positive. It's the positive volume of some different curve c prime. So the flop transition, which we saw corresponded in this singular transition, which we saw corresponded in the gauge theory description to some BPS particle becoming massless and formally extending to negative mass, the structure is completely mirrored in the geometric description by some curve degenerating to zero volume and then passing to negative volume. And then you trade this description for a different one where everything has positive volume. So you can think of this formally. As far as this graph is concerned, you can think of shrinking this cycle, this segment here, and you'll get what looks like a cross somewhere in the middle. And then now you blow up a different segment. So you get this particular five-ring web over here. And this is a schematic depiction of the conformal limit. You can see there's some, in the brain description, these can be thought of as external fibrains, which are non-compact. And the conformal limit is characterized by everything on the interior, which is compact, shrinking to zero volume. So you have a point here and a bunch of non-compact fibrains sticking out. So the most important thing, the takeaway from this discussion, is that there is an identification between the Coulomb branch of the 5D effective theory and the closure of the set of all possible resolutions of the singularity X, which is called the extended Keller cone. And I'll denote it by the script K, but the notation is not necessarily so important. So how do we classify 5D theories using geometry? Well, classifying smooth threefolds or singularities is a very hard problem, and we need to make a few simplifying assumptions to actually turn this into a tractable problem. So without getting into too many details about these assumptions, they can sort of be summarized as the following two main ideas. The first idea is that Y, which is a smooth threefold, this is my Clabiao, it can be realized as a neighborhood of a singular compact complex surface, S. And when I say singular, what I mean is that S can have several components which are glued together along various curves. And moreover, these intersections between various S's, S1 and S2, let's say, are transverse intersections. And moreover, we'll assume that this, if it corresponds to a 5D conformal point, that this collection of surfaces can be shrunk to a point, which means that Y can be mapped to some canonical singularity X. The second simplification we'll make is to, rather than trying to classify every possible conformal fixed point, we will simply concern ourselves with physical equivalence classes of CFT fixed points, by which I mean CFT fixed points up to decoupled free states. And having this notion of physical equivalence suggests a geometric notion of that corresponds to, so the geometric analog of this physical equivalence. And very roughly, what it means is that we want to classify singularities X roughly up to rank-preserving complex structure deformations. And what this does is it allows us to account for theories which are related in the type 2B brain picture by Hanani-Witten transitions. So given these assumptions, we can reduce the problem of classifying threefolds to a sort of graph theoretic problem. And here I've given a schematic picture of what a graph might look like, where the nodes consist of the different surfaces. So in this picture, you can think of S1 and S2 as nodes of this graph. The edges of the graph correspond to different curves that the nodes, or surfaces, if you like, along which they intersect transversely. It's possible to count the number of mass parameters assigned to any such configuration. This is done simply by counting up the number of mass parameters associated to each of these surfaces, rank one surfaces individually, and then subtracting the number of edges, which can be interpreted as constraints on the parameters. And we also have to demand that the normal bundle of these intersections, so the normal bundle of these curves, locally satisfies the Clabiao condition. So this is a big step forward, but we don't quite have an algorithm yet. In order to make this into an honest classification algorithm, we need a few more pieces of information. And this is really three things. The first thing we need to know is the allowed possible nodes. So in other words, the allowed compact Kähler surfaces that we can use to build these Clabiao. The second thing is the allowed graphs. So what possible types of intersections are permissible and which ones can be ruled out? And perhaps even more usefully, which of those allowed intersection configurations are redundant? So is it possible to reduce the number of graphs that we need to look at? And then the third thing we need to know is whether or not the geometry actually defines a canonical singularity. So point one here, the allowed nodes actually has a very nice answer. If we make the assumption that X is canonical, if it's a canonical singularity, then there's a theorem in mathematics which says that the surfaces Si have to be rational or ruled surfaces. So what this means is that the surfaces have to be birational equivalent in geometric terminology to P2, the projective plane, or to a ruled surface, which is a P1. Locally, it looks like a ruled surface looks like a product of a projective line with some irreducible curve of genus G, which I denote here by C sub G. And then their blowups are included as well. The second point is a little bit subtle, and so far we really only know the answer about which allowed graph topologies one can make use of for on a rank by rank basis. And so we've really only studied this in the case of rank is equal to 2. We don't have a full answer for every possible rank. A final point actually has a robust check. What this means is that we have to be able to shrink all the cycles to a point inside of the Calabi-Yau. Or conversely, if you want to start from the conformal point, it has to be possible to blow all the cycles up to finite volume, to positive volume inside of Y. So just a comment on checking positivity. We can expand our Kähler class J in terms of the classes dual to the surfaces Si, and we can impose the condition that all of the minimal dimensional cycles, which I denote by C, are positive volume. And by a theorem, this guarantees that the volumes of everything will be positive on the interior of the for all the allowed values of Kähler moduli or Coulomb branch moduli. And this condition can be imposed using the intersection theory. So it has a nice expression, and it's actually quite easily checked systematically. So now let me talk about a few results. A consistency check that we have to do, of course, is we need to reproduce the classification of rank 1 theories in terms of Del Pezzo surfaces. So the graphs here are very easy. They're just a single node. And we express our Kähler form just in terms of the class of this surface with some modulus attached to it. And the volume of any curves inside of this surface is expressed as the following. So here we use the intersection product inside of the Calabi-Yau threefold, and this can be localized to an intersection inside of the surface. And this gives us the following expression. K here is the canonical class of the surface. And what it tells us by imposing this condition tells us that S is either a Del Pezzo surface, as expected, or possibly F0, which is P1 times P1. So this is entirely consistent with the classification that was already done for rank 1 surfaces. And that's a very strong check that this idea, it's a necessary check. If the idea doesn't pass this consistency check, then obviously there's something wrong. So the new result that I'd like to summarize for you is a classification of rank 2 surfaces. So this is a classification of what we believe to be, with a couple of limited exceptions, a classification of all rank 2 5D n equals 1 CFTs. So the problem here is that the graphs are now non-trivial. One could conceivably have multiple gluings where these are connected by two or more curves. You could have self-gluings, potentially, where a surface is glued to itself along some curve. And it turns out you can argue using this notion of physical equivalence that the intersection has to be a P1, so it's a topologically a two-sphere. And all of the geometries that are allowed, so all of the allowed nodes take the following form. They're either blow-ups of ruled surfaces, which are P1 bundles over P1, so that the curve C sub G that I mentioned, as genus 0. These are called Hirzebruch surfaces. So Hirzebruch surface glued with some number of blowups glued to DP some Del Pezzo surface. or a blow up of a here's a roof surface glued to F0. And this is the full list. And moreover, it's possible to place bounds on these parameters. So the number of blow ups and the degree, what's called the degree of the surface, is labeled N by imposing positivity and excluding three folds that are expected to correspond to 5D KK theory. So in other words, three folds that engineer 60 fixed points. So here, for your entertainment, I've reproduced a graph of the full, to both the rank one and rank two results. And you can see that these different geometric singularities, in both cases of rank one and rank two, they organize themselves into a number of parent theories, which correspond. So these gray theories are the parent theories to which I'm referring. And these are 5D KK theories. They have a 60 fixed point. And you can start from these theories and integrate out matter and get to some 5D fixed point. And so all of them organize into a finite list of parent theories, where you, which are starting points in 6D. And then you can flow from here to theories with less and less matter. The blowups that I referred to of the surfaces actually correspond to adding more matter hypermultiplets. And as we integrate out the matters, that geometrically corresponds to blowing down different curves inside of the surface. So I apologize. I realize maybe this is not terribly visible, but I, at the very least, wanted you to be able to see the structure of the different theories and the RG flows that you can initiate by integrating out matter. So there's a few interesting conclusions that I'd like to summarize here. One thing is that this classification program predicts many dualities among SU3, SB2, and G2 theories. And this is actually visible from this description. Again, I'm not sure if you can see it here, but for example, if you look at this particular theory, at the top here we list the geometry, and this is of course available in the paper. And below, right down here, what we list is the available different gauge theory descriptions that are possible, including the gauge group, the topological data K, and the number of matter hypermultiplets of different type. So it's very often the case that a single theory corresponding to a 5D fixed point in rank two will have multiple descriptions as different gauge theories.
Those are infrared dualities.
Sorry?
Those would be infrared dualities.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Another interesting feature is that nearly all of the rank two, so I mentioned that if you relax the Intralligator-Morrison-Cyber constraints, it's possible to classify, to get a enlarged gauge theory classification. And nearly all of the rank two theories that we predicted in this new classification were validated, with two exceptions. So the first exception was a particular value of the Chern-Simons level K. If the absolute value of K is equal to 8, then for some reason this theory is excluded. It doesn't seem to have any Coulomb branch deformations. So this is maybe a hint that the theory doesn't exist and isn't sensible, as it doesn't have a sensible UV completion, or maybe there's something more exotic about the theory that resists description in terms of some geometric singularity. Second thing, second family of theories that was excluded is SU3, with Chern-Simons level 1/2 and one symmetric matter multiplet. Well, this is really the 6D theory, so the 5D theory that's excluded is its descendant that one would obtain by integrating out massive matter. And this appears to be related to a 6D singularity involving an O7 plane, and possibly has some relation to frozen singularities in F theory. Yes?
So you label a lot of these theories by gauge groups and matter. Does that happen that you have the same theory with different theories with the same label?
Different theories with the same gauge? No, they're all distinct. So if there's a different, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking, is it possible that you have two different geometric singularities which have the same gauge theory description? The answer is no.
Which might be different amplitude theories.
Yeah, no, they're all distinct. Sometimes you need to be very careful about the topological data, like the Chern-Simons level or discrete Z2 theta angle. But if you're careful about that, then it's possible to distinguish everything. Another interesting feature is that the RG flows, at least a family of them, are encoded in the geometry. So in principle, if you start with some theory at the bottom of this picture, you could do blowups. And assuming you have enough control over the geometry, it's possible to reverse the RG flow and understand all of the theories that sit along this flow just in terms of geometry, which is quite interesting because typically we expect not to be able to say very much about the UV description when you have some theory in the IR. Another feature is that all rank two theories that we found geometrically have a five-brain web description. So sometimes you have to add some interesting bells and whistles, like seven brains and oriental fold planes. But ultimately, all of them can be reconstructed in type 2B. And finally, I think that the most important lesson from this exercise is that all rank two theories, all rank one and rank two theories in 5D, they descend. So the parent theories are 5D KK theories that have a known 6D 1,0 UV description, UV completion. So this seems to support the idea that all 5D N equals one SCFTs descend from 6D 1,0 SCFTs by circle compactification. This is a tantalizing idea because perhaps it's possible to use classifications of 6D theories than to systematically study all lower dimensional CFTs. But I think it's too early to conclude one way or another what the status of that idea is. But this is encouraging. So maybe it's possible this can be extended to higher rank. We would see that all 5D theories actually come from 6D ones. So to summarize, I think I'm just about out of time here. Classification of 5D gauge theories with UV fixed points is still an open problem, and it needs non-perturbative input. This input can be rendered by a geometric or five-brain web description, so some UV completion using stringy constructions. The geometric classification using these UV completions is a solution to the problem and actually can be made viable, it seems, maybe with a bit more work for arbitrary rank theories. And the problem essentially reduces to understanding the combinatorics of these different graphs. So far, we've analyzed rank one and rank two theories systematically, and the rank two classification confirms nearly all of the field theories that were predicted by the modified gauge theory analysis. So a couple of future directions I just wanted to point out. Obviously, there's higher rank. An interesting example where the graph topology becomes a little bit more non-trivial is the so-called T5 theory, which is given by the singularity C3 mod Z5 times Z5. So that's a description of the threefold singularity. And it turns out that the topology of this graph consists of three. I'm not sure that I need to actually draw this because it's very simple to describe, but it consists of three nodes which are glued to each other. So what this means is now that you can allow loops of intersections and not simply, you might have thought, for instance, that you have to restrict to linear intersections of these different surfaces, but that isn't the case. One also has to include loops. An idea that I think is very interesting is trying to understand flavor symmetry enhancements due to the U1 instanton current inside of the 5D theories. So an example of this in rank one, there's a theory which is understood as C3 mod Z3 times Z3, and it says manifest SU3 cube flavor symmetry. But this theory is physically equivalent to Del Pezzo 6, which is P2 blown up at 6 points. And if you actually have Del Pezzo 6, if you understand the geometry, you can actually see the flavor symmetry enhancement to E6 in terms of the geometry of the surface. So one might ask, can the same game be played for these higher rank theories? But it turns out when you go to higher rank than one, computing flavor symmetries, that there are some obstructions to doing it. And so while I think it may be possible, it's not going to be quite as trivial as it was in the case of rank one theories. And finally, an interesting direction is to take a top-down approach where if you want to classify 5D theories, you might think of starting with known classifications of 6D and then compactifying them on a circle and then integrating out matter to sort of step down the ladder of fixed point. So I think I'm just about out of time. Thank you very much for your attention.
Are there any further questions?
Is it possible to compute five scale partition functions for this theory, maybe using the gauge theory description?
Sorry, which?
The five scale partition function?
It is possible. There are some challenges associated with it, but it's possible to do. I think typically what people do is look at leading order contributions to it. And
what?
So you want to pass to some limit, I think, of moduli and then compute it there where it simplifies. It is possible in principle, but I think the computations are actually, in practice, they're rather cumbersome to do. I don't know if this geometric description tells you any new information. You have to, as far as I know, one has to go back to the gauge theory description to do this. So I don't know if this classification actually buys us anything new other than identifying. So it gives predictions, for example, right? If there are theories that are dual to each other, then you expect to see relations between these two. But beyond that, I don't know if I can conclude anything more.
Is there any relationship between the graphs that you're drawing and the graphs that one draws for the basis of 60 models?
For 60 models, like an F theory, for example, you mean? Yes. So in 60, so suppose you start with F theory on some Clavial threefold and you do a resolution. So now you're describing F theory on the threefold times a circle. So you've actually gone to the M theory description. You can identify a collection of surfaces inside of the resolution, which intersect in some pattern according to the description that I gave for 5D theories. But there's a change there, namely in that there should be an extra surface that closes the loop, roughly speaking, where the loop around the surfaces, so you can imagine like drawing some curve class that extends around all the surfaces, and this will correspond to the elliptic curve. And so in order to get a 5D theory, you actually have to decouple one of the surfaces and detach one of the nodes from the graph. So in principle, the 5D graph should embed inside of the 6D ones. And if you take the volume of the circle to, right, you want to shrink the volume entirely so you get an honest like M theory description with no extra circle intrinsic scale. And so what that means is that you have to decouple, you have to take the volume of the T2 to infinity. And that means somehow like one of the nodes has to be decoupled at the very least. Maybe a collection of them has to be decoupled. So the upshot of this summary is that the 5D graph embeds in the 6D graph somehow. But going from the 6D graph to the 5D graph is
how do you find the surfaces of the in a graph coming from the F theory setup?
So same.
Say there are two cycles rather than four cycles, right?
Yeah, so you would, if you imagine, maybe I can draw it over here. You imagine having, so there's the F theory base, and there's some collection of cycles that are intersecting inside of the base. And now you can study the normal geometry, the normal curve over a given point in the base. And as you allow the T2 fiber to move over the curve, it defines a surface. So each of these things is one of the divisors, S1, or SI, if you like. And then they intersect according to some pattern. It's a pretty much an analogous story there. There's a few more challenges in computing triple intersection numbers and that sort of thing. But up to that, it's really the same sort of idea. So the difference here is that some component of the T2 fiber will give you a vertical curve, and it defines typically like a ruled surface or something like that. I'm happy to talk more about this offline and maybe give some examples.